As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everybody, this is Rob Benedict.
And I almost forgot my line. This is Richard Spade Jr.
It is. And this is season 3, episode 14, Long Distance Call, which is what we're doing with each other right now.
I want to just go right now and leap into this conversation. You realize the title of this episode makes no sense to anybody under 35.
That's right. I guess
it makes no sense. They're like, long distance call. You mean phone call?
Right.
Like there is no.
Right. Yeah. It really ages.
There's no
the
difference.
Show.
Everybody's area code is attached to their number permanently, and you just dial a number. It doesn't matter.
That's right.
What state it's in.
That's
well,
right.
Youngsters, let Robbie and me walk you through great moments in history.
Back in the 1900s.
All the way through the 1990s.
Yeah. We talked to ghosts on a regular basis.
But we had to dial one first in the area code, then the number. So long distance was an actual thing, everybody. You paid for it. You could call locally. Say you lived in Los Angeles, California, and your area code is 213. You could call another 213 number. But if you had to dial a 323 number or an 818 number, and I'm not sure 323 existed back then, but an 818 number, you had to dial the one first, then the area code, then the number. Now, that wouldn't cost much money or anything because it's still considered local.
Uh-huh.
But the second you wanted to call Vivian in Columbia, Missouri, you had to dial one, her area code, her number, and then that would cost you money because that was now going state to state.
Go ahead and give them the number, Rich.
but hold on. It gets weirder.
Oh, boy. Good, because we've got the time.
Uh-huh. This is the content people pay for.
Okay.
Because it's free.
Right.
It's not just, at one point there was AT&T, and AT&T got busted up by the U.S. government for being a monopoly and broken into multiple long-distance companies. And at that point, long-distance companies were vying for the business of the American consumer. Mm-hmm. So MCI was one of them, Sprint was one of them, mm-hmm. and AT&T, I guess.
Yeah.
Was there another one? And they
Yeah, there were lots.
Right, so you had to buy a long, you had to pick a long-distance server, like you pick a health insurance carrier.
Right.
And that would be your long-distance service. And you could then carry their card and use it on a payphone.
Yeah, well, that's when technology advanced and you could make a long distance call anywhere with your card. You could stop at any, well, there was something called a payphone.
Payphone.
And you could stop at the payphone, dial 1-900, whatever your number was, and then put in your card number and boom. And hey, look, if you're behind on episodes, catch up. Don't be the person tweeting at us about the third episode of season 2 when we're in season 4, which we're about to be. Because we're nearly at the end of season 3. So binge the podcast, binge the show, and join the conversation.
Binge the podcast sounds like, you know, a band name, like Lonely the Band. Lovely the Band.
We are Binge the Podcast. All right, here we go. Long distance call. Bobby tips Sam and Dean off to some weirdness happening in Milan, Ohio.
I thought it was going to be Milan, Italy at first, and I was like, let's take off our shirts.
It's like Paris, Texas. However, Sam says they're already on a case. Dean's. To save him from going to hell.
Yeah, Sam's all up in Dean's chili about going to hell and all that whatnot.
Yeah, but it's happening. Dean's dying in 2 episodes.
Yep.
They finally agree to look into the new case, and Dean hates Sam's idea of summoning Ruby for help.
Oh, please.
So they head out to Ohio, where the dead are calling loved ones.
Not the Grateful Dead. It's not Jerry Garcia calling his mother. It's actual dead people.
The brothers speak to the wife of a man who recently killed himself. The widow explains that in the past, she has heard him talking on the phone with a quote-unquote Linda, but she never heard anyone on the other line. The brothers figure out that Linda was an old lover of the husband's and had died in a car accident with him years ago. They head to the phone company to investigate further and meet Clark, the manager, and Stewie, a technician who masturbates. a technician who enjoys similar websites to Dean, masturbatory porn sites. Dean gets a phone call from John Winchester. That's right, John Winchester.
But John Winchester, who masturbates?
The brothers think that a quote-unquote spirit phone invented by quote-unquote Thomas Edison.
By the way, Thomas Edison masturbates.
Invented by Thomas Edison, which is at a local museum, might be the source of the long, quote-unquote, dead stance calls, but their EMF doesn't pick anything up.
That's so stupid. It's hilarious.
John calls again and tells Dean the demon that holds his contract is in Milan, Ohio. And Sam doesn't buy it and goes to interview a woman who's been getting calls from her dead mother. Dean heads out to see if he can find the demon John told him about. Sam figures out that they are dealing with a crocata. That's right,
which
folks.
Is a pair of comfortable shoes you can wear on a boat or in the home.
I like to call them Crocs.
Exactly.
Crocata or crocata?
I think it's crocata.
Crocata, which I like to enjoy my crocata with a glass of Chablis. Sam calls Dean to warn him, but the crocata pretends to be Dean and lures Sam into a trap.
Here's an interesting piece of trivia.
Yeah.
I'm actually dunking some crocata in my coffee right now.
Dean almost kills an innocent man, a person the crocata, posing as John, told Dean was possessed by the demon that holds his contract. Sam is attacked by Clark, the telephone company manager, who has been their crocata all along. Sam is able to kill the creature. Back at the hotel room, Dean apologizes to Sam.
Wait, Sam kills the crocata back at the hotel room?
No, Sam kills the crocata and goes back to the hotel.
Why don't you saying that like the end of a sentence? Why are you saying it like it's a continuation?
Right.
You keep going, Sam kills the crocata.
Right, there's a period in there. There's a period. Sam is able to kill the creature. Back at the hotel room, Dean apologizes to Sam and admits he is scared. Sam tries to reassure Dean that he is there for him. There's lots going on here.
Yeah, man. Sure. Let's get into...
Let's unpack it.
R-R-R. Rob and Rich Review.
Okay. So long distance call.
I thought it was super clever. I dug it.
Yeah.
I really dug it. I mean, again, I know the whole call conceit is dated, but I thought it was heartbreaking. I mean, especially the little girl that calls the dad. That was just heartbreaking. And man, it just, it really hit me in the feels. I thought that was really well acted by that guest star. And
I'm going to say this episode, which is very clever and well-written, was propelled by the acting.
Yeah.
Everybody nailed that guest star, that young lady who I looked up. She's worked a lot. She was amazing.
Oh, man. That girl, that young lady was so good.
Knocked it out.
So good in that role.
Yeah.
And then the dad of the little girl who calls him was so good.
Yeah. And guess who else? Once again, Sam and Dean, both of them bringing it, the comedy and the drama.
Yeah.
Tears. Yeah. I mean, everybody was so good. Even the small parts. The woman doing the tour of the Edison Museum was really funny.
She was very funny.
She's like super funny. She was like, and we're walking.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. And Jewel, the actor who played a Stewie, I've worked with before, and he works a lot. Now he does.
That guy works all the time, and he's so funny.
So funny.
And I can't remember what I've seen him in, but I've seen him in stuff.
Well, he and I did a movie called The First 20 Million. It was a movie with lots of interesting people in it that did really poorly at the box office. But we became friends, and now he produces things, too. Anyway.
But he's in stuff all the time. I mean...
Yeah, most recently I've seen him in, he was in the movie, he's in the series...
Big Bang Theory?
Never Have I Ever.
Oh, no, no, no.
And he was in Big Bang. I think he was in Big Bang. But yeah, he was in Never Have I Ever. That's a
series. But has he ever?
But you have to watch the show to find out. I'm not going to spoil it.
Also, so who else was in the first 20 million? Because you've worked with some of the brightest stars in Hollywood.
Oh, man. Who wasn't?
Because you've worked with Ryan Reynolds. You've worked with Justin Long. You've worked with Justin Timberlake. You've worked with Stewie Long.
So great acting, clever story.
Yeah.
It propelled an actual voice.
Yes.
Jeffrey Dean.
Yes.
JDM coming back. So that was exciting to see.
Yeah.
I still don't know what's going to happen. I had no idea that JDM came back and did a voice.
I assumed the whole series is over in a couple episodes because Dean's going
to
die.
And the whole episode's about to be over. The whole season's about to be over. The whole show is about to be over. So what do you give it? Give me a beard.
I give this one a healthy season 11 Brad Creaser. It's a nice full beard. It's a Vancouver winter beard.
Right, that you can wear.
That still looks classy on set, but a little edgy. Like, yeah, I still got some stank on me. But I'm a married man, and I'm not interested. No, thank you, ladies. So it's trimmed nicely, as if to say, come hither. But then his sort of icy cold, laser-like professionalism says, go thither. So I'm going to go with season 11, Brad Creaser.
I'm going to give it the Richard Speight December of 2022, where the mustache was much
heavier than the beard.
Heavier than the beard. It could have used a little trim around the upper lip.
Yeah.
But it was quite impressive. People stopped and went, "Wow, now that man is in the wrong century."
Yeah, now that man doesn't care. No longer tries.
That man's wife never looks at him anymore.
Okay, good. So just for people, you know, who like to follow us at home, that's not a Loggins and a Stapleton. It's not perfection.
Right.
But it's solid. Mm-hmm. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely enjoyable based on all elements we've already discussed.
Yeah. Both of those beards are friends of ours.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was, it's really something, this show. It really is something. I got to tell you, not even kidding. Like, it's continues to impress me. Because I thought at the beginning of the episode, I was like, this is going to be one of those flyover episodes. But no, it had some meat to it.
Yeah, it did. And again, incredibly strong guest actor and actress performances.
And I got to tell you, we got two episodes left in this season. So buckle up.
Yeah, man, buckle up. We are blessed to have with us right now, talking about Long Distance Call, Season 3, Episode 14, a camera operator and occasional director of photography for Supernatural for all of its years, Mr. Brad Creaser.
Brad Creaser.
Happy to be back, gentlemen. So great to see you both.
Good to see you, my friend. I'm glad you're inside from doing your DPing on the Fire Country. Fire Country show. Brad's been DPing a new show, new hit series, but he's been outside fighting fires, part of Fire Country. So,
and you two have recently gotten to see each other.
Yeah, but a week and a half ago, which
took a long time. Usually I land and go right to some place to meet Brad for a pint, and it took literally the run of the show plus me going home plus me coming back for an extra day to actually meet up with the man. He's a busy one.
Well, and then it was the COVID. I got the COVID in the middle of it all too. So,
yeah.
And you did too, Rob. How are you feeling?
I'm not all the way better. I'm better. I'm out in the world. I'm not positive anymore, but I still feel pretty run down.
I was lucky. Mine was pretty mild, but it hit me right in the middle of shooting my second episode. So it was really bad timing,
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, it all worked out. And my first episode that I did airs this Friday on CBS, Friday night.
Check it out.
There you go.
Check it out, everybody.
Fire Country, everybody. Check it out. That's awesome. Well, so let's take you back in time about 13 years. We're talking about this episode, Long Distance Call, which Rich and I really enjoyed.
We really enjoyed it.
It's a great episode. And it's Bobbo. It's Mr. Singer at the helm again.
Directed by Singer, written by Jeremy Carver, you know, who went on to eventually become the showrunner. So this is a really solid episode. What is your favorite Supernatural episode to watch? And number two, what was your favorite Supernatural episode to shoot?
Well, gee, that narrows it down to 300 episodes.
Well, let's see. I have about 314 choices. Wow.
Or just think, what's one that comes to mind?
Well, I mean, I have my favorites, which I think are fan favorites as well, which is like, Monster Movie, which is one of Bob's.
A Monster Movie,
Fun one.
Good one.
It's Changing Channels.
Oh, yeah, starring Richard Speight.
That's a great one.
Sadly,
you better name one that I was in.
I can't remember all the titles. That's the embarrassing.
A Monster at the End of the Book.
No helping, Rob.
Because the whole trickster stuff, like when they do the... Japanese game show, like all that. That's a classic. You already covered Changing Channels. I mean, you just can't call me Shirley.
We're not going to, Rob. We're talking about my episodes. Anyway, so it's so many great ones.
Then moving on past Speight.
The real Ghostbusters, you know, the one, the convention, where we did the convention.
That was fun. Were you in that?
Yeah. Yeah, I was.
No, that was a good one too. Stanley Park. Baby was a really
That's a great one.
Yeah, Baby, Matt Cohen.
Yeah, Mr. Tom Wright.
Tom Wright.
That was quite a feat, and it was a really interesting process. Very different from anything we had done, just in terms of lots of small video cameras and mounts and, you know, everything from inside the car. So that was pretty cool. But oh gosh, guys, there's so many great moments. In so many episodes.
Right. And finally, at number one, Don't Call Me Shirley.
We're not going to, Rob. We're talking about my episodes. Anyway, so.
All right, so we're talking about Long Distance Call. There's so many great performances in this episode. All the guest stars really nailed it. Are there moments on set where you're watching an actor for the first time, a guest star for the first time, and you go, wow, they really nailed it with this one? Is that like on set? Do you, as a camera operator, are you like aware of that?
Oh, absolutely. Like it'll stand out. Looking at this episode again, and I looked at it twice because it was a little foggy. It's been a while.
Sure.
But I really enjoyed the young actress that played the daughter who was here, you know, getting calls from her mom. I thought she was good.
Sherilyn Wilson.
Yeah. When we get a guest star on set and they deliver a performance, and it really stands out because, you know, granted, there's been a few stinkers. So
yeah, but when you think about the law of averages on your show, Rob and I comment on it all the time. Kudos to Heike for the casting in Canada and the Ulrich Dawson Kritzer for the casting in Los Angeles, because the guest star casting is next to stellar.
Yeah.
Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, so much so that when you talk about the stinker, it only stands out because we have so many great guest stars on the show.
It's true.
And I'm really trying to think right now of what guest star have been like, ew. And maybe there are a couple that weren't the, you know, didn't like knock, weren't home run hitters, but I don't remember one that like really shat the bed. It's been, so far at least.
No,
I mean, it's been really impressive.
No, I agree. I mean, for me, it's a part of the process. So it's like how you interact with somebody on set. Like their performance still may be good, but they're a little more difficult to work with.
Well, let's talk about that, because we've talked a lot about over the years in our interviews with you about how you are in many ways another character on the show. As the A camera operator, you're on the set, you're up close and personal with everybody. And a lot of times for a nervous guest star actor, you're the third person. They meet the makeup and hair people, but when they come to set, they might meet Jared and Jensen, the director, but then it's you. And you are the one sort of you're the link between the acting and what's being captured on film, right? Yeah. Because you're doing both. You're up there. If it's a handheld shot, it's you running around with them. If it's a close up, it's you right up close to them. All those things are true. And you're the one nudging performances right and left in terms of like, I need you to go a little bit that way when you get to that beat. So you're bringing the mathematics into the execution of these performances. You've obviously developed a really good on-set process for getting to know a guest star actor, because you've been doing it well. I'm curious, is there a method to this, or is that just who you are? Like, did you have to like find like, ooh, first couple episodes, I didn't really introduce myself and I felt they were nervous. It really helps when I say, hello, I'm Brett. Like, is there a process you go through to ensure that they are comfortable so that you can do your job and they can do their job?
Absolutely. My first thing that I always did, and I think it's partly my personality, because I am a social person. I am friendly. I like to think I am, at least. But whenever somebody new would walk on set, I would go, hi, I'm Brad. Welcome to Supernatural. Like, I'm the camera operator. So I would like to set them at ease right away, because you're going to be dealing with them, you know, more than others sometimes. But even just like you said, the mechanics can, I need you a little to the left here. You kind of leaned and you blocked them that time. And you work it through. But it's a great job. It's a great position to be in, to be in the thick of it. Like watching this episode again last night, we were still shooting film on season 3. It was our last season of shooting 35 mil. But I'm looking at some of those fight scenes. So there we were with the bigger cameras, handheld, like right in there, you know, getting dirty with them. And it's fun. It's really fun to be part of it. I always enjoyed doing the monster POVs. Those were always my favorite. Like, because I would generally do it with sound effects. And then the sound guys would be like, Brad, we don't need to hear your brrr. So
I am the, but it helps you. It helps your performance.
Monster. Oh, yeah. Like, doing the hellhounds, I'd be like, I'd do the growls, and I would chase the actors, and sometimes it would really get them going. It's like, especially their backs are to us, and I'm just yelling, and I'm going to be getting under right up behind you.
Oh, man.
It's fun.
Here's a question for you. When you're talking about these handheld shots, and for those who Haven't seen a camera operator do a handheld shot. It literally is. They have two handles on the base, but it's basically the camera on their shoulder, and that's it. There's nothing else supporting the weight. A camera with a mag on it versus a digital camera, what's the weight difference?
A lot.
So the camera with a mag on it, which would be a film camera,
yeah,
is significantly heavier. Yes.
Yeah, no, they were definitely, you know, they got more streamlined as the years went on. But yeah, they were heavy. I mean, and especially after on Supernatural in particular, you're guaranteed one 14-hour day handheld doing the fight scene every episode. You could almost...
So the film camera was significantly heavier than the digital camera?
Absolutely, yeah. I
because of the mag, which is the film.
Yes, yeah. I can't hazard a guess of what the actual weight was, but it's, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 pounds.
It's a Christmas miracle you're not talking to us like this right now with your one shoulder.
I'm a little gimp, but the digital camera certainly got easier to maneuver.
Right.
And you know, undersling and run around with it low or whatever. But, mm-hmm. you know, we had rigs, like some of the, you know, the stuff we had was pretty impressive with the film cameras too.
In this episode, you have a lot of phone conversations, and obviously the other end of the phone calls added later in post. On set, when I was there, it was always Robin props doing the other end of the phone call. Do you recall at this point, like, who's doing the other end of that phone call?
I don't. I don't know if Robin was doing it at that point.
Or sometimes it's the first AD.
First AD or script supervisor.
Quite more often
than not. But our show was unique in that, you know, Robin ended up doing a lot of that, the off-camera stuff. But
right.
Especially for the boys. Yeah. But in general, it was just, and the script supervisor was like, great, you know,
you do
it because then they can concentrate on their thing.
Their job, yeah. The other thing in this episode was that stuck out for me was the bad guy, what do you call him, the Krakata. His mouth opening all weird. Do you remember what that was?
Yeah,
like?
I mean, again, like, our fantastic visual effects team, I think at this point was Ivan and his crew. So we were doing in-house visual effects on the lot.
So it was more visual effects than prosthetics.
I believe most of that was visual effects, like the mm-hmm. teeth, everything. Like they had to warp his jaw, like especially in the profiles when he's going into suck the soul out of the victim. And but again, there's a case of, I believe, another local actor guest star who was a great scary villain, and his little assistant in the phone room there was, you know, pretty good as well.
Oh yeah,
comic relief.
Yeah,
funny character. And
he's great. And Jewel,
there's one thing that we did that sort of stuck for a long time when the boys go to the Thomas Edison Museum, and the tour guide is, and we're walking, and she's hilarious. So like, and we're walking, that stuck with us for the rest of the series. We were like, we're walking.
Was that improv on her part, or was that scripted? Do you know?
It was scripted. I believe it was scripted. But I caught one bit as she goes off camera. She's like, and we're not touching that, and we're walking.
Yes, that was hilarious. Yeah, you know, when she said that, I was like, God, that sounds familiar. I don't know if it was just a bit that I'd seen before, if I'd heard it on set.
Probably us, because we, you know, we'll take something and we'll run with it and beat it into the ground.
And we're walking. Yeah, yeah.
So it's begging for.
Oh, that's funny.
But there was some cool stuff in this episode. One of my favorite shots in this episode was when the young boy answers his toy telephone.
Oh my God, so creepy when that thing rings.
And we did the classic Spielberg dolly zoom in behind him, so the whole background is changing. So we're on a longer lens, on a zoom lens for folks at home, and I'm zooming out as Dave is pushing the dolly towards the kid. So you see the change in the background go from very compressed to wide, but the image of the kid stays the same, but it gives you this really unsettling effect. And I thought it was a very effective use of it here. It's done a lot, sometimes not done well or overdone, but I thought it was well executed in this case. And
that's Dave Riopelle you're talking
about.
That
was my buddy Dave,
Dolly Grip.
Dolly Grip extraordinaire of the entire 15 seasons.
It's an interesting, that position's an interesting one, I think, because I always thought of the Dolly Grip as part of the camera crew.
Absolutely.
But then their department, they fall under the grip department.
Right.
which is interesting. Like, they really are part of the camera crew, because Dave Riopelle was part of every shot. If you, if your dolly was moving, Dave was moving it. Like, it was all part
of
it.
Yeah, and the camera moves are not just me. It's all him, and I'm just holding on for dear life. You know, it's like, right. He would make me look good because his timing was good. He would know that if somebody was blocked, he could shift. He could do, like, having a good dolly grip is worth their weight in gold. Absolutely.
Well, he was sort of famous for being able to do motion controlled shots without motion control.
Basically,
I mean, he was the motion control.
Yeah, like repeatable moves.
And which is key for visual effects sometimes. You want the repeatable move, which has to be incredibly precise. And I remember when I was going to do one as a director, I'm like, so should we get the, you know, we rent the machine? And you guys are like, nah, Dave's got it. And Dave's back there like, I got you, Captain. And sure enough, he did this very intricate move that was on Jake Abel that we just did once without Jake and then once with Jake, and it was exactly the same.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, the only time I used a motion control shot, it wasn't perfect. We had to fit all kinds of, like, when we had the robots do it, it wasn't as good as when Dave did it.
Yeah, because we did Techno Dolly on one of your last episodes just before the lockdown.
Last day before COVID shut down.
Yeah.
And that shot we had to mess with like crazy in post to try to make it work. Dave's better than robots.
It was a very complicated shot. But yeah, no, Dave would do it. I remember doing through the years, and some people would cringe hearing this, that we were kind of doing it on the fly, but he was that good because that was part of his personality. He was all about being able to know his timing, do a count in his head that this is a 3-second move or a 5-second move, and muscle memory. And it was amazing, amazing to watch, really. Like,
well, again, and that's really the secret weapon of this show. I mean, so many of you guys were on it from the beginning. So it was literally, we talk about it being a well-oiled machine. It was literally a well-oiled machine.
I mean,
15 seasons, you know, same group of people, really the core group of the crew, keeping it together. I mean, you, Dave.
And Matt, I was going to say Matt Tischner.
Matt.
Focus Puller. The three of us, we were like, it was a pretty tight unit, that the stuff we pulled off was pretty impressive.
When did Jose start?
Jose was there from the beginning, but he started as the B camera second assistant.
Okay.
And then became the A camera second assistant and eventually the A camera focus puller after Maddie left. So in season 12. So Jose's been, I think he was one of the lifers. Yeah.
Another all-star. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that when I started on Supernatural, I swore that Dave Riopelle and Matt Tischner were related. I'm like, they looked alike. They as we all got older, they didn't. They looked like, you know, but like at the time, I'm like, are they older brother, younger brother? You know,
father son,
father. Oops, baby, father son. You're like, what is this? Because you know, there's a lot of like families who are in the business, and I thought, and I only knew them as Dolly, Dave, and Matt. I didn't know they're anybody's last name.
Right.
So I'm like, well, I know that man's first name is Dolly, and that man's first name is Matt. Maybe his last name is Dave too. The Daves.
Oh, that's funny.
That's like you and me, Rich. Most people think that I'm your son.
Truly, they do.
Oh,
they
think
Robbie's my son from a failed relationship. We'll be right back.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Conroll from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more. Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
Thanks for supporting Supernatural then and now. And now, back to the show.
So we have to, coming back, just trying to bring it back to this episode, we have to talk about the Jerry classic motel room. There's a motel room with starbursts and flowers.
It's amazing. Even Brenda, we were watching it last night, and she commented on the powder blue fridge, like the vintage appliances he would source,
yeah,
and the kitchen table and chairs. And his hotel rooms are they're famous. I mean, he did so many interesting things, I think, inspired by his trips around the country.
They're so great.
There's
so many on this show, and they're so great.
So many.
It faded in the later seasons because, you know, then finally we had, you know, home base with Men of Letters. But there were very few standing sets in the early seasons. Bobby's house was probably the only one. And then there would be a motel room. And of course that would change episode to episode.
Right.
And they did really, the art department was phenomenal on this show. The stuff that they would pull off.
Hey, I had one question that, just to circle back onto that shot of the kid on the phone. Is there a name for that kind of shot when you're zooming in, when you're zooming out and dollying in? Zolly? Doom.
I don't think it has a name.
The Spielberg.
First done in Jaws.
Yeah.
With Roy Schneider sitting on the beach when the first attack happens.
Seeing the shark.
That's the first time that shot was ever done?
Yes. As far as I know. That's the history.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's been, you know, replicated hundreds of thousands of times ever since. And I've been on many shows that we've done it. And as an operator, it's really tricky because some camera guys will have the assistant do the zoom, and of course then you have the dolly, but I always like to do the zoom because I could finesse it. I could feel the motion of the dolly, and I would have Dave count me down. It's like he would give me a 3-2-1 just before we stopped, so I would know to try and time my zoom the same way. But yeah,
tough on the focus puller too, man.
Oh yeah, no, it's very tricky because it's critical, and then it gets easier as you go in. The wider you get, the focus gets more generous. But yeah, I believe it was Jaws was the first time it had been attempted.
Who knew that Spielberg broke ground in cinema? That's interesting.
It's crazy, right?
You never think of him being like a legend, but go figure.
When Dean is sneaking into the house to trap the man that was framed, we see lots of frames within frames. Also, the use of foreground elements. Are those things Serge or Bob come up with the day of? Or, I mean, is it like, are they like, let's use this space or objects to create a more dynamic camera frame? Or are you involved in that?
I think it's a combination of all three of us. I mean, Bob always had a plan, and his camera movement, especially in this episode, I made a note because it was really... You know, he'd love to do elegant moves. Like he would do interesting stuff where, you know, you're coming around behind the actor and that. But I definitely think we did frame in that house. And I think that was, you know, an aesthetic Bob wanted. You know, Serge is on board and I'm trying to find it. That, yeah, we were, you know, corners and walls and staircases. And it did have sort of that frame within the frame, which is one of my favorite, you know, approaches.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. And a man who had been framed.
Yeah, exactly.
See what they're doing there, the rich?
I never put it together. You're like the Spielberg of this podcast, Rob.
I am. A lot of people are saying that.
A lot of people are saying.
Not everyone's saying.
And going back to like the acting, like Jared and Jensen, like it was fun to watch them. I mean, they're so much younger now.
Yeah.
But the performances were solid. You could see. It's amazing that early on, it kind of really seemed, you know, the characters were well at hand with both of them.
And the actors clearly had a bond, you know, mm-hmm. And I think and that shows as well. I mean, those guys, I mean, the fact that they lived together for a lot of these early seasons, you know, they were sharing a place at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was there, like amazing. Season 4 or 5.
I think it was 4 or 5 that Jared had the house down on Marine Drive and
yeah. Yeah.
They were roomies.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, some shows actors don't even speak.
It's a recipe for disaster in most shows. Just so we're clear. It's a miracle that didn't end it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Hey, do you have a preference, man? Like, having done all the shooting you've done, do you have a preference, stage versus location? I'm not saying out in the rain in the forest, but I mean, like, if you can be in a creepy house or in a built creepy house, which do you prefer?
Probably a built one.
Because you have more space and more,
and you have more control. It's all about controlling.
You can move walls.
You can design shots based on the set ahead of time. That's like, yeah, we're going to need to pull this wall for this thing. And lighting, of course, gives you more control of where you can hide stuff. And I mean, in the early seasons, the abandoned houses and stuff that Jerry built were phenomenal. The textures they built into these sets with the walls, like crumbling lath and plaster or wallpapers, and they would leave gaps so Serge could light, you know, have downlights on these walls, even though it's supposed to be, you know, it's movie dark, but you would have so much texture. It's something that really struck me when I joined the show is how the art department and Serge, Jerry and Serge, got together and would create such interesting textures in these environments that they would build. And even on location, like Serge would use dinglage, which is, you know, a leafy branch in front of a light to cast a shadow somewhere, just creating more life than rather just a flatly lit building or house.
What do you call that? Dinglage?
Dinglage, yes. Peter Dinglage.
Why? No.
I don't know. We need a little dingle in front of that lamp. So you'd get a little branch and you put it in. So, you break up, make some shadows.
Is that an industry standard word, or is that just a supernatural word?
If you were to go on set and say to the DP and say, I think you need some dinglage on that light.
You'd
be like, who are you? Who are you to tell me?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I've heard you guys use that term, and it definitely sounds like a cancelable request. But I know it's got some sort of history.
Another term, I guess, you know.
It's got a cinema history, I'm sure.
Well, it's probably what you said. It's a little dingle, and then you say dinglage.
Yeah. It's just grown. I mean, for me, it's second language, but obviously people are like, what? What did he just say? Yeah. What are they talking about?
Speaking of cancelable, Stewie's computer screen has porn sites up on it. And obviously, I know that that's ad. Usually, I'm assuming that's usually when I had a computer screen, it was a designed, you'd hit a button and it was a design that was already sort of up on the screen, right? Who did that? Is that props?
No, that's, we had a playback department.
Playback.
A local company.
Can we talk about
it comes through the art department. They'll create the graphics or generate the images. And then these guys will put it in to the computer so that it can be on a loop on a laptop or projected on the screen. Same guys that do cell phone displays now, you know, for like caller IDs. And there's whole meetings about playback now and prep on any show about what's going to be seen. TVs, in bar screens, any screen, and it's all preconceived, put together, and then, you know, sent out.
And it has to be material that's copywritten, either created on your own, or you have a...
Yeah, it's got to, everything's
got to
be cleared, because
it's got to be cleared.
They went through a lot with, especially like the Asian beauties, because that came up a lot with Dean's character.
Really?
You'd have that on the laptop all the time. You'd get caught with it.
Oh, so that is a recurring...
No, it's a recurring... common thread through the whole series.
We just learned that if you click on that, it goes to a Warner Brothers website.
Does it really?
Yeah, if you go to bustyasianbeauties.com, it actually sends you to Warner
Brothers. That's hilarious.
Were you considered an expert and advisor when it came to creating porn sites?
Thanks, Steve. No.
I just read them. I don't write them.
That's funny. But yeah, it plays later through the whole series with Jensen was always like, even had magazines in his room in the bunker that were busty Asian beauties.
Wow.
And even how he claims one of his lines in the episode in this episode, he's like, I recommend the platinum membership.
Worth every penny. Membership.
Yeah, it's worth every penny.
It's
so funny.
It's funny. There's this underlying thread of humor and these little sidebar things that were, you know, kind of cool, and they kept it running through the whole.
Yeah, well, and character stuff too. Yeah. Like that Dean is always eating. I mean, that's
The first scene. He's stuffing a hot dog in his face. We're at UBC.
He's always eating.
Dude, it is so great to have you here. You're such a fascinating member of the team. You were so boots on the ground for so much of this awesome stuff, and a great guy, one of our closest friends. So it's always fun to jaw with you about these episodes, man.
Well, it's my pleasure. I love talking to you guys. It's always always a good laugh. My face hurts from smiling.
Good.
hey.
Hey, camera operator Brad Creaser, everybody.
Thanks,
Thank
Brad.
You very much.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, this is Jeffrey Dean Morgan. We are going to take a quick break.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, it's Jeffrey Dean Morgan again. Welcome back to the podcast.
You know, something we didn't talk about, Richard, and that was so great having Brad on. How great is that? Always. What was the SHA-33?
Shaw-33? I don't know.
Was significant to that? Something?
Well, it's the thing that came up every time the ghost called or the critter. I don't know. I don't know what that means in telephone lingo, but
you're of no use to me then.
Damn it. Just now you figured that out?
Anyway, great as always. Great interview with Brad. You know what I love about Brad too is busy man, hard at work, has time to watch this episode twice.
Yeah, twice.
In preparation.
Cares
that
much.
Interview.
Cares that much.
Yeah.
Cared then, cares now. It's awesome. Brad Creaser. And now it's time for Mythology.
Okay. Crocata.
Yeah, I'll take one of those. Are you ordering?
Okay, make it two. And a latte, please. The lore of the crocata primarily comes from Ethiopia and India. Traditionally, it is not depicted in a human form, but more like a large dog blended with a wolf, usually the size of a small horse.
I think you call those a dolf.
Uh-huh.
Or a wog.
It would mimic the cries of humans in order to lure them into the forest to eat their bodies, not their souls.
For example, if it was mimicking the cry of Rob Benedict, it would say, Ruth, where's my nice hat? I can't find my nice hat, Ruth. Did you move it?
And then poor Ruth would go, oh, I'm coming, Ooh. Rob.
It's you talking crazy talk because of the free poor.
In this show, it ate their souls. Supposedly, the creature had an unhinged jaw. I often call you the unhinged jaw of the relationship.
Thank you.
Rather than individual teeth, it had a single bony ridge protruding from its gums.
You know, I had a cabin up on Bony Ridge. Look down onto them teeth. God's country out there. God's country.
This man's jaw was quite disgusting.
Yeah.
I wonder how they did all that, if that was...
Aren't you going to feel terrible if that's just his face?
Yeah, so that was a pretty disgusting mouth, the way that played itself out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good episode, though. Crazy crap.
You ready to have some fun?
Fun!
The episode shares a title with a number of items that were big influences on Mr. Eric Kripke, the show's creator. A Muddy Waters song. Kripke is a big fan of the blues music.
Huh.
A Twilight Zone episode, which happens to share an episode number with this episode, old number 58.
Wait, now what was it in a Twilight Zone episode that was like this?
It was also had the same title, Long Distance Call.
Oh, got it. Oh, the title.
Yeah.
And there's also a Muddy Waters song called Long Distance Call?
Yeah.
Wow, this is fun facts
Long
for me.
Long Distance Call.
All right.
Can't get you on the horn. A short story by Richard Matheson. Richard Matheson wrote the short story that Eric Kripke's college short film, Truly Committed, was adapted from.
Huh.
Or as they would say in England, Richard Matheson wrote the short story from which Eric Kripke adapted his short film, Truly Committed.
Huh.
The film won the Best Short Award at the Slamdance Film Festival in 1998.
Wow.
Richard Matheson was also a writer for The Twilight Zone.
Head exploding. That's an interesting tidbit. That's amazing.
Yep.
That's some good fun facts right there, man.
Those are good for they're actual fun. And they're factual. So there you go.
I got another one. Sam and Dean used the aliases Raimi and Campbell. And this is a reference, of course, to Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell, two big influences on Eric Kripke. At one point, he wanted Bruce Campbell to play John Winchester. At another point, he wanted to play Bruce Campbell. And a judge.
I love Bruce Campbell. I'm glad Jeffrey Dean Morgan played the role.
Yeah, for sure. It would have been way different. And people may not know this, but Bruce Campbell is an actor who was...
Oh, my God. They know this. Right. Everybody knows Bruce Campbell, right?
Right, but he was kind of the muse for Sam Raimi in the early Sam Raimi movies. He's
so good in Army of Darkness. I mean, he's clever. He's so good.
Bruce Campbell, man. Which one is the one that has Bruce Campbell doing the fight with his hand that is possessed? It's his own hand. Evil Dead 2. Check it out. And you know what? Here's one that Rich is going to love. If you go to www.bustyasianbeauties.com, it takes you to the Warner Brothers website.
Now, see, I didn't know that. This is good information to have. However, Rob already knew that. Discovered it years ago.
That's weird. Kind of crazy. Warner Brothers bought that.
You know what I'm not buying? This.
What that I don't know?
Little innocent act.
I thought it was funny when Dean was like, get the VIP, whatever. It's worth every penny.
Yeah.
That line.
That was funny. Funny stuff. The Latin prayer that Dean tries to use on Clark is a real exorcism prayer from the Catholic Church. The prayer of Saint Benedict of Nursia. Benedict, who was the patron saint of bad toupees.
Wow. I had no idea.
What also the patron saint of the Merkin.
None of these are true, except that prayer was actual exorcism. Wow. Crazy.
Yeah, man.
Insane. And are there other Saint Benedicts from other places? You know, like, is there a Saint Benedict of Los Angeles?
Well, Columbia, Missouri. You guys are from Columbia.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe your mom resides at the following address.
And her name is Saint.
Indeed.
So what a fun one.
What a great one. Really good episode. Very clever. And a nice dust off to the old classic use of the telephone. Everybody's learned something here today. Everybody.
That's right. And most of all, me.
Sure. I think it's probably not you. I think it's probably people who didn't know that there was ever long distance. But sure. And you.
Well, I mean, everything, though. Everything. The Saint Benedict part. And that this was the name of a Muddy Waters song.
And that issue you have with your crocata is healable.
Exactly.
Little salve on that twice a day for 2 weeks, and you'll be right as rain.
That's right. Man, I can't wait. This season's nearly over, and I'm super excited about the next two episodes. So,
well, let's get at it.
We'll see you next week.
We gotta end this one before we can start the next one.
Exactly.
Cue that.
This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars include Tom O'Brien, Anjul Nigam, Sherilyn Wilson, Ingrid Torrence, and John Shaw.
Long Distance Call was written by Jeremy Carver and directed by Robert Singer.
Editing by Nicole Baer. Music by Jay Greska. Nicole Baer, by the way, edited the first episode of Supernatural I ever directed.
That's right.
Just my imagination. So there you go.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
This episode originally aired on May 1st, 2008. May Day.
This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spate Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, buddy?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
This episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter, pretty please, at SPN Then and Now.
And become a member of the podcast at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now. Sam calls Dean to warn him, but the Krakata, who now spelled Korkata,
change the spelling in the middle of the sentence. In the
middle of the episode, the Krakata becomes the Korkata.
You just sound like you just called me room. Back at the hotel.
Room.
I got to tell you something right now. People need to know this because I think honesty is important. Rob woke up about 30 seconds ago. And just so you know, we're doing this podcast. As Steve and I were on this podcast, we were sitting here for a good 20 minutes to the point where our jokes to Rob in text form became actual questions of concern.
Yeah.
Like, are you good? Yeah. I hit up Ruth.
Yeah.
I reached out to Ruth, who, by the way, has seen Rob's Krakata.
We actually have a Krakata court in the front yard. It's a fun game.
And I texted Ruth, hey, is Rob okay? And then got back a couple of explanation points. I made her all worried.
Yeah, she should be.
So the point is, Rob is just, he's just getting his sea legs. Then he spilled his coffee, which he's wiping down right now. Yeah, he knocked his coffee over across his desk.
And I blame
Krakata.
You guys. I blame Rich. I fell back asleep. But I'm awake now in time to read the summary of this episode. There's lots going on here. Hey, Mom.
Steve's giving us a hurry up signal. Steve, this is gold, man. You can't write this.
Well,
you wouldn't dare write this.
If nothing else, put this part on for the Patreon listeners. And speaking of Patreon.
Yeah, join us, won't you?
Yeah, if you're not a member, consider being a member because you can really be part of the conversation and get lots of extra stuff like this. This great conversation about
Rob. I like your passionate pitch. If you're not a member, be a member.
Consider the lore of the Krakata primarily comes from the Ethiopia. I don't know why I put the in. That shouldn't have been.
Yeah, that's not English. That's not grammatically correct.
But I wonder how much of that was actual makeup and prosthetic, or was it just all digital?
Well, Brad answered those questions in the interview. Weren't you listening?
Right. That's right. Because we filmed this after the interview.
Clock in, Benedict. The Latin prayer Dean uses to try to use on... Whoop, say it again.
I was just going to ask you if you've had another fun fact for me.
Story Mill Media.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.